Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 25th, 2016. Count another month down on the march forward in time. I was on John Wells' show the other night, and we were talking about how this year has just flown by in the summer, and we decided that we were in a time warp. I really think that. The times, I mean, I don't really think that we're in an actual time warp, but it certainly seems that way. I just want to make an announcement about the paid cast. I said I don't want to forget this or run out of time at the end of the show and not get it in. First of all, the paid cast, $3.95 a month. We're coming to the end of August, and what's going on is if you miss a month and you want to purchase it later, it's going to not be $3.95, it's going to be $9.95. And there's a reason for that. It's because somebody has to go in and change things and set things up and do a special emailing to the person. So it takes a bit of doing to do this. So the best thing is to set up the subscription now, get into the August. And there will be a lot more people coming in as this becomes more widely known around the general internet. So my audience is getting a first crack at this. But go sign up for the podcast. I call it the paid cast. And this is why I'm mentioning this. There's a many-part series. One is called Tesla's Mind. That's going to go long into the future. The first episode was in August. There's another one called Radiation and You, and that's going to be a long-standing series, going to go far into the future. And there's another series that's coming up. It's called, and this first episode will be in September, first thing in September. It's called The World Before the Great Flood. And oh my goodness, is this a huge, important topic? And my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, broke this back in the early 2000s. And it's a topic, of course, I had been studying all my life through archaeology, etc. But what a huge topic, mixing in the now, my ability to analyze this from a scientific point of view. So we're not just talking about history, fables, or myths, or whatever. We're able to literally put real hardcore information on this, the world before the Great Flood. And on my webpage, I mentioned that there's the 1950s, or actually going back to the 1930s, the Flash Gordon movies. I think 1934 was the first Flash Gordon full-length feature, what they had at that time, black and white. But there is a actual piece of true history linked into the Flash Gordon. It started as a comic book. But there's real history associated with this. And, of course, if you're not familiar with Flash Gordon's story, Flash Gordon is a guy who lives on Earth. And Ming the Merciless, is the kind of the bad guy. He's the leader of Mars. And anyway, the death rays come to Earth. Flash Gordon, of course, has a ray gun. And a lot of this technology back in the 30s was super, sci-fi, whatever. And, of course, literally, a lot of this technology went back to what Tesla did. But the story of Flash Gordon really has a basis in history. And today, there are still the Baal worshippers. And you might not exactly know this. I've given quite a few lectures on the topic of Baal, or Baal, as some call him. There's various spellings. But the story is that before the Great Flood, and actually before the Venus event, let me just put this into perspective because this is important. The Great Flood followed the Venus event, which the Venus and Moses event, which was also the Quetzalcoatl event of the Mayan Indians. the Noah's event preceded all of that by many thousands of years. And you can look in the Old Testament and see this, because the Old Testament as we see it today, which is a very edited book, the Old Testament is simply the lineage that goes down between Noah and Moses. And then there's further lineage that goes down through the lineage that gets down, actually down to Christ. But back in the pre-Venus days, because Venus came through the solar system and really took Mars for a much bigger disaster than Earth. Earth, we know, had two occasions about 54 years apart. And we know this from the Mayan Popol Vuh and the Codex. But Baal lived on Mars. And so anyway, there was travel between, this is the legend, I'm just telling you what the legends were, that there was regular travel between Mars. Velikovsky identified the fact that Mars' orbit came much closer to Earth back in those days. And so, of course, these Mars and Earth had different orbital periods, but there was a time when Earth and Mars were relatively close together. And if you timed it right, the travel time to Mars was very short, just a couple of days. So it's not like a big deal. And anyway, so Baal lived on Mars. And this is the same story as the Flash Gordon, where Ming the Merciless did all of these things, you know, to Earth. And of course, Flash Gordon, and as a little kid, I watched the Flash Gordon series. But the point I'm making is that this had a basis in reality, in actual history. And of course, back in those days, many people were much more tuned to those things. One of the problems with the internet today is it filters out a lot of information that people knew on a regular basis back then. As I talk about the world before the Great Flood, there will be authors that I'll be bringing up that were very much tuned to the world of the flood and the pre-flood conditions. But anyway, just a bit of an introduction there, a little more than what I wanted to do. But that's the first September 1st issue of the paid cast, The World Before the Great Flood. And that will be filled with a lot of detailed information of that period of time. And that will be, once again, a sequence that goes on through October, November, December, out into 2017 and beyond. Tremendous amount of material there. And that's what's so wonderful about these paid casts is they allow me to do what I call a deep dive into these topics. Okay, well, on to tonight's show. By the way, this week's paid cast will be on glyphosate. Oh, what a topic. I've done a bit of my own research on this, and there's a lot of new information. There's a student that just made public his realization that Cornell University, my old employer, has been in collusion with Monsanto to promote GMO products. And anyway, listen to that paid cast. It's going to be loaded. So that's for this the paid cast that goes with today's free show. If you have WhatsApp on your telephone, get it off of there. WhatsApp is a spyware deluxe. It basically takes everything out of your phone and sends it off to what they call third parties. Well, I can tell you who the third parties are. WhatsApp is a spyware deluxe. And so get it off your phone if you've got it there. Some people ask me if I would put WhatsApp on my phone, and I never use these kind of things, so I looked into it. Oh, man, get that off your phone. Get it off your kids' phones. This is tracking everything you do and more. I said I wouldn't bring up anything political on this show. I just want to give a little chuckle at Obama as he goes out of office, and this is not funny. With the Louisiana floods going on, he refused to go there even at the invitation of the people of Louisiana. He went golfing instead. So now, you know, the Louisiana is in the Gulf of Mexico, and then we have the situation in the Gulf in the Mideast. There's two Gulfs, and they're spelled G-U-L-F. And so I believe that Obama's legacy, we will call him the Gulf President with an O. He has played something like 135 golf games in the last, you know, couple hundred days. The golf president. Tonight's main science topic will be on habitable planets, the studies they have found. They call these exoplanets, meaning out of our solar system. And there's some interesting things, but the reason that this topic came up is because last week, NASA announced that they had discovered a new planet, a so-called exoplanet, that could potentially harbor life around our very nearest neighbor, Proxima Centauri. This is part of the Alpha Centauri system and part of the constellation Centaurus. But this is an interesting star because it's a triple star. The double star is our very nearest neighbor, 4.25 light years away, but Proxima Centaurus is very distant from the other two. So it sees the main pair of the stars system. It sees them as one, essentially. So in terms of celestial mechanics, it's not a closely bound triple star system. The Russians back in the 1990s did, and also the 1980s, did a lot of work on star systems and planetary systems to try and understand how they function over long periods of time. And what they found was that the triple star systems are very unstable. But it turns out that the Centauri triple star system is stable because you have a close, relatively close binary pair with the third star very far away. And so it is around the Proxima Centauri, the third star that's far away, that they found what they consider to be a habitable planet. Now, the other thing about the third star, the Proxima Centauri, is that it is a red dwarf, which means it's kind of like Jupiter. It's a unlit star in the sense that unlit, meaning we can't see it with our naked eyes. It's a relatively dim star, so you need special equipment to see it. And, of course, the Hubble telescope can see it because it can see in the infrared. So having a planet around it that might be habitable is probably very questionable because it doesn't put out enough light or heat light to keep it, say, water in a fluid state, as is the case with Earth. Our sun, every time we turn around, and it's very important that the Earth spins on its axis, there's literally thousands of factors on planet Earth that make it habitable for us, not the least of which we have a moon which generates the magnetic field of Earth, and that magnetic field blocks the proton flux from the sun, which would have a tremendous cascade effect of X-rays if it were allowed to hit our upper atmosphere. But it's not. It's blocked by that magnetic field. That's a majority of that is a plasma magnetic field. And that blocks the solar wind from directly hitting our planet. Venus, which does not have a magnetic field, nor does it have a moon to generate a magnetic field, Venus is sitting there out there in the solar wind and has an entire signature of X-rays on the sunward side. On Earth, that would be devastating to life. I mean, life would have a very tough time evolving. And so, by the way, the ding-dongs at NASA, when they said that, I announced this last week, they announced that Venus would have been Earth-like, may have had life billions of years ago. Well, Venus doesn't have a moon. Therefore, it doesn't have a magnetic field there. Therefore, it has no protection against the solar wind. Therefore, any life on that planet would have a very tough time existing unless they walked around with maybe lead hats on. They developed lead hats. But that whole scenario of Venus being an Earth-like planet, you know, 3.5 billion years ago is so far-fetched that, I mean, they have one little micro piece of information which is extrapolated three times. So not even worth talking about. But tonight's topic, I'll be talking about exoplanets, so this somewhat leads into that. I do have a couple quick announcements first. When you go to websites and they ask you to accept a cookie, just say no. Like the typical ones are CNN. Oh, let me see. What other ones have I been to lately? I don't go to CNN for news. I only go there to find out what garbage news they're trying to pawn off on the public lately. Okay, here's a topic. NASA made an announcement this week, and it was all over the news. This is the headline. This is the actual headline. I'm reading it. NASA made all the scientific research it funds available for free. So, I mean, after I picked myself up off the floor, many people emailed this in, and of course I saw it too. But after I picked myself up off the floor, I said, oh my goodness. You know, so first of all, anything NASA releases is well homogenated, blended, already looked at data that has been pilfered, filtered, the good stuff thrown out, and by the time the NASA Tier 2 scientists even get it, it's already been thoroughly filtered by the Tier 1 scientists. But look at this headline, made all the scientific research it funds available for free. So we looked into this. There are a whopping 861 articles posted on this page. And is this the sum total of NASA research for the past 40 years? They have tens of thousands of scientists that all should be pumping out work daily. 861 articles over a 40-year period by tens of thousands of scientists. Some have retired, other new ones have come in. You got to be kidding me. This announcement, this headline has nothing to do with reality. And so, I don't know. Never a straight answer. That's all I can say. It's just disgusting. The NASA Space Agency is the most disgusting group of clowns on the planet. Talking about disgusting, the National Hurricane Prediction Center every week has more egg on their face than crow to eat. And of course, there's really been no hurricane season at all, in spite of their prediction. They have not even come out for an update. Usually around August, they come out with an update, but they're so far off, I think they don't even want to show their faces. But once again, we really don't have a hurricane season this year, and the reason is because the sun, for starters, is a very low energy. It has been for the last decade, over a decade, about 11 years, really. We are now into the next solar cycle we should be picking up, and the August return current sheet, which is part of my theoretical work, is of itself not strong enough to create hurricane conditions, even with new moons passing, etc. Right now we're getting a bit of activity, and which brings me into the Louisiana flooding. I have not been able to determine if this is man-made or not, but they're sure getting the business down in New Orleans, and that's all I can say. It continues. There seems to be no end in sight. And these storms are concentrated storms. They're not big, broad storms that cover the whole Gulf of Mexico. They're concentrated right on New Orleans. So I really cannot tell you if these are man-made. They have all the characteristics of man-made storms. But in a court of law, I could not prove that. This past week, we had snow in three states out in the Rocky Mountains. The Rocky Mountain states. And you know, they've been announcing that we've had record heat this summer, etc. I want to tell you that my own analysis, in many parts of the world, it's been very cold, very much below average temperatures. And so that's what the climatologists do. They pad the data. They don't report all of the data. And it's not simply a matter of temperature change either. It's a matter of heat content. Those are two totally different things, temperature and heat content. So when they talk about global warming, they're talking about temperature change. But when you're talking about climate change, And you're talking about heat content, which is a totally different issue. And I've talked about this many times and not going to repeat it. Just very simply, if you take two boxes of air, exactly the same, two boxes of air, exactly the same temperature, they would have the exact same thermodynamic properties. But now take one box, have it with some water vapor in there, and have them at the same temperature. The box with the water vapor has a higher heat content. It's holding more heat than the box with simply dry air, even though they're the same temperature. So these are totally different. In fact, the box with the water in it, the water vapor, could have a lower temperature but still have more heat content. So these are concepts, these are thermodynamic concepts, completely devoid of acknowledgement in the climate change, you know, world. That's all paid for government baloney, and they use very poor science to try and back up extremely illegitimate claims. A listener wrote in and was confused about what I have been saying about Jupiter and Saturn. I was just mentioning that Proxima Centauri, the star near the third star in our nearest star system, is a red dwarf. Jupiter is a red dwarf, literally. Red being the color of sulfur dioxide. There's a large amount of sulfur dioxide in the universe. But the red dwarfs, also the color red comes from the fact that they are not burning brightly. If you took an iron, say that you iron your clothes, and you start heating it up, and you could heat it up to where it's yellow hot, the same 6,000 degrees centigrade temperature of the sun. If you could heat it up that hot, first it would start out in the infrared, and you wouldn't be able to see it. Your dog or your fish would be able to see the iron because they can see in the infrared. Your cat could see it, but you couldn't because your eyes are only work in the visible spectrum, what we call the visible spectrum, which is a very narrow band, by the way. Okay, as you heat it up through the visible band of light, it first becomes red. And that's why when we call red dwarfs, that's why they call them red, because they're very low energy. They're still giving off enough light to be seen in the visible spectrum, not completely infrared. But a red dwarf also could be simply an infrared object. And that's the case with Jupiter and Saturn. And this person that wrote in was confused, was wondering if I was talking about nuclear, latent nuclear radioactivity that comes from, for example, uranium or other naturally occurring radioactive elements that are in the planet. And as they give off radiation, they also give off heat. This is not what I'm talking about at Jupiter and Saturn. I'm talking about fusion, and this is, you can read this in my books, it's in my work. I talk about this all the time, but if one person was confused about this, then probably many people would be confused. So let me explain this, and this is, like I say, right out of my work, my text, my original paper is printed from 1979. Okay, here's the situation. Jupiter and Saturn have identical chemical compositions as the atmosphere of the sun. They are primarily what we call gas planets, but that's totally a misnomer. They are small, unlit stars. And what I mean by unlit is that they are not visible to your eyes in that visible spectrum. They are visible in the infrared. They have very definite infrared signatures, and I published a picture of Jupiter, what they call a thermal picture of Jupiter, but basically that's an infrared picture of Jupiter. I published that in my Picture of the Days. You can go to the Picture of the Days subpage and find it there. Not all gas planets have the same chemical composition. For example, Neptune and Uranus are more nitrogen-based. They're not prone to fusion because they do not have the hydrogen atmosphere. Now, this is something I discovered in pressurized hydrogen if you have an electrical discharge. Now, what happens in that electrical discharge is it bends, and in the sharp bends of the electrical discharge, the magnetic field accentuates, and that's what is known as the pinch effect. as the self-induced currents as they discharge in this is an ongoing process, so it's a cyclic process. The fusion creates electrical separation of charge. That causes the discharges, which keeps the fire going. And now let's examine a regular fire. Say you have a wood pile, it's burning, and you have air draft coming in the bottom, burning, and then the smoke going out the top. Well, you need that constant influx of oxygen to keep the fire burning. And then the heat, it's a combination of factors which keep this fire burning. It's the same in a fusion fire. The electricity, the electrical discharges, which kick off the fusion reaction, which cause the separation of charge, which causes more electrical discharges, etc. And you can see these electrical discharges in the atmosphere of Jupiter, of Saturn. And so you see these electrical discharges, and they're accompanied by explosions, the fusion explosions. So it's basically an electrical fire in the hydrogen-based atmosphere. And, of course, hydrogen is not the only element. They're building up from hydrogen into the larger nucleides of deuterium, etc. They're building up. But primarily it's a hydrogen fusion fire is what's going on here. You have iron. Iron is very common in the sun. You see the spectrum of iron all the time. And so you have this nucleosynthesis going on, the creation of heavier atoms in the atmosphere as the fusion. That's what fusion is. It's the fusing of atomic nuclei. It gives off energy based on E equals mc squared, a tremendous amount of energy for a small conversion in mass. So it is literally a fusion fire in the atmosphere. When the Voyager spacecraft went by Jupiter, they could see the proton wind coming off the surface of Jupiter. And, of course, the NASA scientists had no idea why it was doing that, and they'd swept the data under the rug and have never come back to visit it. And, of course, I was there at Cornell when this data was coming in also and wove it into the rest of my work. This was an essential piece of the puzzle to understand how fusion works in the star system. So Jupiter and Saturn are literally star-like. They're small unlit stars, unlit meaning they're not visible in the visible spectrum, but they're very visible in the infrared. Saturn puts out a lot more energy than Jupiter for its size. And so anyway, that's the short story. If you look into my books, etc., my work, you'll find a lot more description on this. And, of course, in the future, there's a lot more work on this coming out. So it is an internal heat source. This also, by the way, is what creates the proton wind coming out of the fusion-based object, which creates the capacitor which the comet nuclei discharge, which Earth discharges and creates our weather. So this is a large-scale process. Anyway, it's a complicated topic, but no Jupiter and Saturn, I don't mean latent heat of nuclear decay in the core, somehow in the core of these planets. No, that is not what I mean. I'm talking about nuclear fusion, that is the combination of low mass elements like hydrogen, etc., in the fusion process, and it's a fusion, it's an electrical fire in the atmosphere. And also, I've talked about this many times, that the sun does not have enough mass, never had enough mass, to burn for 4.5 billion years and produce the light that we see. So the concept of the core fusion model of the sun, totally incorrect. The fusion is up in the atmosphere. The Russians proved that. I have a very nice experiment that's in my weather book. It talks about how the Russians did a penetrating X-ray experiment of the sun, proving that the core is cooler than the surface of the sun. And the surface of the sun is hotter than the interior of the sun. And the corona, which is a sea of relativistic electrons moving around the sun in orbit, electrical orbits, and that's what accelerates the protons that go busting through. They break through the corona. That's what they call coronal holes, and accelerates the protons out into literally beyond the orbit of Pluto. acting like a Van de Graaff generator, literally, and that is why the protons move out there. It's just like the... Anyway, this is getting a little bit more esoteric here. But when I talk about fusion on Jupiter and Saturn and the heat being given off by nuclear fusion, that's what I'm talking about. It's literally in the atmosphere of Jupiter and Saturn. And in when I talk about Proxima Centauri, the star, our next nearest star neighbor, being a red dwarf, that's what's going on there also. So, and that's why when people talk about red dwarfs being habitable, no, a red dwarf is not going to be a habitable planet at all. Because if something is red and big, that's not a red dwarf necessarily. It could have a solid surface or whatever. But the red dwarfs are literally hydrogen-based stars with ongoing fusion, not a good place to live. Sometimes I cover financial situations or world situations on this show, and this is very necessary. Brazil, while you were watching the Olympics, the government of Brazil was absconded with. The president, who just recently shook hands with Putin and the other leaders of the BRICS nations, B in BRICS stands for Brazil, so it's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Those are the BRICS nations in the original core group, and of course many other nations are associated with them, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Iran, you know, many other nations are associated in that new banking system, which is flying in the face of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, etc. And so the main purpose of that banking system, the BRICS, it's all about banking, is to, number one, provide their own SWIFT system so they can do business without going through the World Bank. And the SWIFT system, as it's called, for international exchange, they can control their international exchange rates and stabilize them, and it allows them to do international business on a sane basis. That also allows them to give loans that will help countries, not destroy them, as has been done by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Okay, so at any rate, while you were watching the Olympics in Brazil, the Brazilian government was absconded with. The president was replaced. He immediately replaced the cabinet, and so now they have gotten a new credit rating with the Swiss bank, Credit Suisse Bank, and now listen to this. They have made arrangements for Brazil basically to pay back previous loans. In 2013, Brazil was paying 52% of its gross industrial product. Brazil was paying 52% of that to the World Bank. It is estimated that in 2018, in just 2 years after being re-established under the World Bank financial system, it will be paying 80% of every penny it makes to the World Bank in interest. Doesn't sound like a very good deal to me. But like I say, while you were watching the Olympics, that's what happened to the government of Brazil. All in the background, probably didn't notice, probably didn't hear it on the evening news. The devastating earthquake in Italy, all I can say is if you can send any kind of help, whatever, help these poor people out. This past year, I myself had been in quite a few earthquakes. Believe me, when the earth starts shaking under your feet, there's no other feeling of helplessness in the world, because the earth is going crazy and there's really nothing you can do about it except run out. This happened in the early morning hours in Italy, in the central mountainous region, and most people were sleeping, so the death toll, the missing toll, is very high. And the devastation very severe. So 6.2 on the Richter scale, the adjusted Richter scale. So provide any help that you can. The following topic is very necessary. Prince, the singer, died last April. in what was initially announced by the press very falsely, without any even a shred of evidence or information that it was a drug overdose, tried to label him as a druggie, and this was just doing a little too much cocaine or whatever they blamed it on. He was not a drug addict. He did not use drugs. And now it turns out, months and months later, this should have been known immediately, that he died of a overdose of, it's called fentanyl. It's a drug that is highly, highly poisonous. It's highly controlled. Someone slipped it into a prescription drug that he had, so there was a pill in there that was not supposed to be there. Somebody laced his prescription pills, which he had just gotten, with this drug, basically murdered him. This should have been known immediately. There should have been an investigation in April immediately following this. And there was even a second wave of announcements that came out about a month and a half later, saying that, trying to corroborate this idea that it was a drug overdose, that he was having problems and seeing psychologists, etc., which was not the case. And so now here we are in August, and they're finally releasing the information that it was literally he was murdered. And so was this a mistake? I saw the news analysis, and they were trying to find every reason in the book. Oh, it was mislabeled. It could have come from mislabeling. No, these drugs do not get kind of accidentally into some other prescription drug. They just don't accidentally get there. They're put there by someone. In the case of Prince, he had been talking about chemtrails. He was going public. He was saying that, basically they existed and that that had to be stopped. And there are certain people, once these people get in the music industry, that believe they own these people and that they have a right to kill them if need be, if they get out of line. And so anyway, now coming out that in fact Prince had been murdered. There's no other way to put it. And so now they're going to start to try and open up the Pandora's box of leads. Well, it's a little bit too late. All of the culpable suspects would have been long since, into the woodwork, not the least of which would be, the people who were the had access to Prince to do this. And I'm not talking about his immediate associates or his family. I'm talking about people that would have worked their way in close to him with the express purpose of killing him by slipping him a lethal drug. The problem is that the news media is complicit in this, and all of the information put out by the news media at the immediate time of the death and afterwards and even months later, once again, is totally complicit. And why would the newspapers now try and go through all of the scenarios that would take away culpability from those who murdered him? I'm just speechless. I'm just speechless. But there again, this is the paid media, and just mind-boggling. Mind-boggling that the world we live in is so corrupt and so evil. It's just beyond words. Okay, now on to the topic of exoplanets. And I apologize for the number of announcements tonight, but I felt that all of those were very important. Exoplanets, what are they? They're planets around other star systems. There are now cataloged close to 4,000 exoplanets, and I believe the first one was discovered like in the mid-90s. There are many techniques for sensing these. Now the telescopes are getting powerful enough to where they can actually see something there. Some of them have been discovered in rings of material that are orbiting stars. But the latest to hit the news, and this is very exciting news, is that there is a so-called habitable planet surrounding our nearest neighbor, Proxima Centauri. And so I explained that earlier, that that's a star, it's a triple star system. And in spite of the fact that the Proxima Centauri is a red dwarf, it is, does not put out a lot of energy. They're saying that this planet is in a what is known as the habitable zone, and that's where liquid water is possible. It's in a fluid state, not frozen. It's a little difficult to have life forming with pure frozen water, although bacteria, etc., has been known to live in icy conditions, etc. And, of course, when you get up to the point where water turns into steam, probably not very good for life either. But this appears to be in that habitable zone. It's I wouldn't say it's someplace I'd want to live or move to tomorrow myself. Because let me just go through some of the factors on planet Earth that allow us to live here. We spin around on a 24-hour cycle that's just right so that we don't drop too much temperature at the nighttime when we're in nighttime, and we don't get too hot during the daytime. That 24-hour cycle is works out pretty well. If we spin slower on our axis, then we might have a bit of a problem because the temperature fluctuation would be too much. On the sunward side, it would get way too hot. It would parch everything, dry out. On the nighttime, it would get far too cold. Remember, we lose 20 degrees of temperature between the 10 and 20 degrees between day and night. So if you had day for, let's say, 5 of our days daytime and 5 of our days nighttime, the nighttime would turn into a deep freeze. We'd really have serious problems. So just the fact that Earth rotates in 24 hours is a good thing. The fact that we're the right distance from the sun, we receive a fairly good amount of radiation that balances our temperature right in that, you know, 70 degree range. Of course, if you choose to live farther north, it's going to be colder. If you live towards the equator, you know, you can go up in the mountains and have relatively mild climates all year long. But the issue with other issues, the radiation belts are blocked because we have a magnetic field. The atmosphere is conducive to not too high a pressure, not too low a pressure. We have a broad spectrum of chemical species in the atmosphere. We have vast oceans. We have both salt water and we have fresh water. We have weather systems. We are close enough to the sun where we're having active discharge of the solar capacitor, which creates our weather. The electrical passages of the weather systems a good deal of energy comes into Earth via electrical currents. The winds, the storm systems that drive all of our weather, that create rain, clouds, everything else. We have a sun that is not only with visible light and all of the other aspects of infrared light, for example, but it has electrical currents that are essential to creating the weather that causes this to be a very habitable planet, the rain, etc. The mineral content in the ground itself is very rich, so that allows abundant plant life, etc. And so, anyway, these are just a few of the factors that allow abundant life to prosper on Earth. We have a moon, as I said before, that creates the magnetic field of Earth, but also much of the biological life is tuned in to the cycle of the moon. So, anyway, many, many things that allow Earth to be a prosperous place to live. That is not going to be the case around some of these other planets. As I understand, the Proxima Centauri planet, which is called Proxima Centauri B, has a 3.2-day orbit. This thing is close to Proxima Centauri. And so, therefore, just for that reason, it's probably going to be bathed in high-energy protons and also, therefore, X radiation. So if it does not have a moon, it's probably not a good life candidate. Just like in the solar system, the planets that have moons have magnetic fields. The planets that don't have moons don't have magnetic fields. And like I said, Venus or Mercury or in literally Mars, not a very good place to be high radiation hazard, and no protection from storms. Even if we get hit by a severe solar storm, we do have somewhat of a protective magnetic field that is being changed continually, but it gives us a level of buffering that has allowed man to survive on this planet and, you know, to develop and all of the other higher levels of development of life. So anyway, don't pack your bags quite yet. And by the way, remember that my picture of the day, I always put up extra pictures for educational audiovisual for the lecture of this show. So go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Scroll down to the center column. You'll find the picture of the day subpage there. Or if you listen to the archives also, go to, I have the link right there by the radio show. You can click on that and go to the picture of the day subpage. Okay, so exoplanets, the conditions for life as we have it on Earth, if you took the 3,000 planets plus planets, close to 4,000 planets that have been discovered, you're probably going to be hard-pressed to find one that has all the conditions that we have on Earth. Like I say, don't pack your bags yet. But the development of life is one issue. My estimation is that as we move in closer to the inner part of the galaxy, where there's rich, rich star populations, star density, that's where you're going to find a lot of intelligent life. We're out in the far reaches of the galaxy. We are not going to have abundant life out in this region. It's like if you lived out in the middle of Australian outback, you know, pick the most remote place on planet Earth. That's where we are in the galaxy. So don't expect abundance of exoplanets that are habitable to the level that Earth is. Don't expect a lot of alien activity. Now, here's another thing. We get to see stars, but at a great distance. If you're in a fairly dense star cluster in towards the inner part of the galaxy, something very strange is probably going on. They probably had to travel and visit other star systems, and it would have been very easy. For example, man wants to go to the moon because, hey, it's pretty close. You know, so there's an effort to get to the moon because it's right there. Going to other star systems, as I've talked about on previous shows, is not difficult. We're in the boondocks. We're 4 light years away from our nearest star system neighbor, Alpha Centauri. But, going there in 4 years is not a big deal. It would take us at 3/4 of the speed of light. It would take us about 6.5 years to get there using the technique, the 1/2 or the 1G acceleration that I talked about before. And you can do that. That's a very simple calculation. But if you're in the center, closer to the middle of the galaxy, the star systems are much closer, and probably you're going to have life systems there, intelligent life systems, that could have millions of years of history. Also, it's much easier for them to survive, say, a natural disaster of a planetary scale, like, say, a Planet X, a large comet comes into the solar system and destroys a planet. Well, with the movement that's going on, the chances that all life would be destroyed and not recoverable get very slim when you're getting into those inner places at Earth here. There's really no place to go. There apparently was at one time. Mars was a blue planet, a water planet, but it's not anymore. Mars is not the place to go to. We really don't have another Earth-like planet, really, any place near. And even near star systems. But if you're in the inner part of the galaxy, you're going to have many places that are very, very close by. So you're going to have interstellar travel. It's going to be, you're going to have intelligent civilizations with millions of years of history. And what is the probability that they're going to come out and want to visit us? Well, that possibility is there. And I would say that, yeah, that's probably happened. Just like, you know, man wanted to cross the oceans, that need to explore, that need to get out and go beyond where no man has gone before, not to borrow an expression from someplace, but literally. So I expect that we have been visited just for that reason alone. I've personally never been visited by aliens. I've never seen one. I've never seen a mothership hovering over my house or something. That I've never, you know, is not an experience I have. But based on statistics, based on logic, there's no reason to believe that this planet has not been visited. And also in my book, The Diamond Principle, I talk about the fact that civilizations developed on DNA. That DNA is the same on the far side of the solar system as it is here, and there's something about symmetric, biped type, upright species that's it's a byproduct of the generator function of DNA. And when I speak of generator function, I'm talking about the generator function that goes with my calculate primes problem, that the natural sequence of building of the nucleotides of the four nucleotides in the construction of DNA and the end result, you're going to find the same type of species developed. They're going to look different, but they're going to have a lot of the same characteristics, the symmetry, the bisymmetry, the right left-hand side, etc., and then the intelligence. And then mixed in, oddly enough, like I was talking with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about how strange chemistry is, organic versus non-organic chemistry, and the fact that once you get into organic chemistry, all of a sudden at a certain point, you have what we call life. The ability of chemistry to build up and adapt and live off of the environment. And actually, you know, you have cells and you have plants, etc., all the way up to advanced cellular structures like human beings or animals. And so that development is natural. It's going to happen in other places. And what's the biggest cause of the demise of these species? Extra solar system objects coming into our solar system, acting as large comets and then devastating things. This is the way the solar system works. This is the way the universe works. Just like forest fires, just like tsunamis, just like earthquakes, just like volcanoes. It's part of the natural development of the environment. And so we live in this environment. So the point of my book, The Diamond Principle, is we have a limited time to get off this planet. We have a limited time to understand our role in the universe. And if we spend all our time worrying about the Middle East war or ISIS or the stock market or the housing crash, the impending, you know, next financial crisis or whatever, then that's exactly what the people in control want, is they want you to be totally misinformed and totally chasing around after the wrong boogeyman, because it keeps you from focusing on what you really should be doing, and that is getting this human species collectively off the planet. But you're not going to be able to get off the planet until the species understands its place in the universe and understands how to live with nature. And that ain't happening. You know, with all the diversions today, you know, the human race is so lost. That's all I can tell you. The most important issues you will never hear on the mainstream media or the big daytime radio shows. The main issues, every day they should be pounding on that we have to, as a species, get our act together, organize so that we can, because if this planet takes a big hit, man has been able to survive the Great Flood, the Venus event with Moses. That doesn't mean that the next event, whenever it might happen, and I do not have a predictive date, but it doesn't matter if it's in 100 years or 1,000 years. It's going to take man, given our current condition, it's going to take man that long to adapt to live in space, to save these and then stay up there long enough so that the planet can recover from a major, major disaster and then re-inhabit the planet. These are big orders, but that's what it would take to preserve the species. We're more bent on destroying the species than saving it. It's interesting to see any of the stories that come out that regarding people being saved from space-based disasters. Only one or a few people survive, and that's really the crux of it. Because as a species, man has been completely diverted. But back to exoplanets, very interesting. I follow this. I believe that a lot of the exoplanets, I would say there's a lot of them that are true, but I would say that there are a lot of them that are false readings. What they are looking at are other events, and so the data has been misinterpreted. On a very positive note, there's nothing more important, I would say, in the space program than understanding if there's life in the universe or if there's concrete evidence of exoplanets. But here's the real message. The subliminal message I seem to get when I read the articles about discovering other planets is that they're hoping to find life or possibly intelligent life. What it tells me is how rare Earth is. And I never, ever, ever see that in any of the articles I see on the reporting of exoplanets. The lesson that we should be learning is that this planet we live on is a pretty rare gem out in the middle of nowhere, and we're not taking care of it. That should be the message in every discovery that is made regarding exoplanets. We're not going to find another one like this. We have to take care of it. We're not taking care of it, and there ain't no place to go. There's no place to pack your bags and get out of here. You know, living on the moon or trying to get a few people to live on the moon. I got a kick out of this recent announcement in Arizona? No, it was on the side of the mountain there, Mauna Loa, in Hawaii. These guys have been in the Mars Project trying to exist for a year by themselves, and they're driving each other crazy. It's like the movie. What was that movie about two guys trying to live together in habitation, and, you know, they're driving each other crazy. I'm out of time. Remember to listen to the paid cast for this week. It is dealing with glyphosate. Remember, the red letter sale is still on the sales page, and I'm keeping that up there. Some people asked me to hold it because they have fixed income or they're waiting for a check. So take advantage of that, the jmccsci.com. You can also join the webcast, $3.95 a month for the extra paid cast. You can also get that for free if you order over $100 worth of product, 1 month free or 6 months free. If you have over $300 in your purchase, you get 6 months of the paid cast free. So a lot of great reviews from the paid cast. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.